de la Amazonía del Noreste, y en el 2013 recibió otra multa de 7 millones de dólares por desaparecer una laguna, pero la corporación se niega a pagar. La Unión de Naciones Suramericanas, UNASUR, reiteró el martes su rechazo a las sanciones de Estados Unidos contra Venezuela. Washington pretende sancionar a funcionarios venezolanos a los que acusa de violar derechos humanos de la oposición que protestó de manera violenta en el 2014. El presidente Nicolás Maduro dijo que 118 naciones han rechazado las sanciones unilaterales de Estados Unidos.
118 gobiernos del mundo, de África, Asia, Oceanía, Europa, América Latina, el Caribe, donde dice el movimiento de países no alineados rechaza la más reciente decisión del gobierno de Estados Unidos de fecha 2 de febrero de 2015 de expandir las medidas coercitivas unilaterales en contra de Venezuela. El movimiento de países no alineados rechaza categóricamente la más reciente decisión del gobierno de Estados Unidos.
El Papa Francisco recomendó 3 actitudes para acabar con la injusticia del hambre en el mundo. El líder católico destacó la importancia de pasar de las urgencias a las prioridades. Pidió ser testimonios de caridad y ser custodios y no dueños de la tierra. El pontífice reiteró que la inequidad es la raíz de todos los males. Añadió que en efecto hay comida para todos, pero no todos pueden comer. El embajador de Palestina ante Naciones Unidas, Riyad Mansour, propone un mecanismo de negociación colectiva para poner fin al conflicto con Israel, el cual incluye a varios representantes de la comunidad internacional. El diplomático añadió que un requisito indispensable para la búsqueda de la paz es el cese de la ocupación, que data de 1967, lo que podría lograrse mediante una resolución del Consejo de Seguridad. Asimismo, defendió el ingreso de Palestina a la Corte Penal Internacional como un paso civilizado y pacífico, dirigido a lograr que Tel Aviv cumpla con sus obligaciones con otros estados del mundo. Por su parte, el secretario general de la ONU señaló que es importante que se hagan todos los esfuerzos necesarios para que finalmente los palestinos puedan ejercer sus derechos inalienables.
Ban Ki-moon señaló este martes que aunque 2014 fue declarado Año Internacional de Solidaridad con el pueblo palestino, los esfuerzos por solucionar la cuestión palestina se vieron seriamente obstaculizados. El vicesecretario general de Naciones Unidas, Jan Eliasson, leyó el mensaje de Ban en la sesión de apertura del Comité de la ONU sobre los derechos inalienables del pueblo palestino.
The aim was to catalyze global action.
Ese año fue diseñado para catalizar la acción mundial sobre la cuestión palestina en lo que parecía el contexto promisorio de negociaciones de paz directas lideradas por Estados Unidos. Hoy Gaza continúa siendo un lugar desolado sometido a un bloqueo y donde existe mucho sufrimiento humano, dijo Ban. El titular de la ONU instó a los donantes a materializar los compromisos que hicieron en octubre pasado en la Conferencia del Cairo para la Reconstrucción de Gaza. Añadió que a medida que la ONU se acerca a su 70 aniversario y que el comité celebra sus 4 décadas, es importante que se hagan todos los esfuerzos necesarios para que finalmente los palestinos puedan ejercer sus derechos inalienables. Jorge Millares, Nueva York.
The resolution we've submitted today does not call for the deployment of U.S. ground combat forces to Iraq or Syria.
El presidente Barack Obama el miércoles pidió al Congreso que firme un documento que le dé permiso para usar tropas contra Daesh, el llamado Estado Islámico, en los próximos 3 años. Obama señaló que la resolución que él envió al Congreso no pide autorización para una nueva guerra terrestre en el Medio Oriente, pero sí permitiría el uso de fuerzas especiales, si estas son necesarias, en algún momento. Ron Goches, de la organización comunitaria Unión del Barrio.
Creo que lo que estamos viendo es exactamente lo opuesto de lo que prometió Barack Obama como candidato en el 2008 y en el 2012. Vemos de que lleguen más tropas a invadir a Irak, Afganistán, o puede ser Siria, puede ser Líbano, puede ser Libia. Es algo totalmente en contra de los intereses del pueblo de sus países, porque vemos de que ha muerto más de 1 millón de personas ya en los conflictos en Irak y Afganistán en esta última guerra. queriendo decir de lo que está pasando allá es simplemente por los intereses de los Estados Unidos, no por los intereses de los países y de los pueblos musulmanes o árabes, y por eso creo que todo el mundo va a estar en contra de esto.
El activista Carlos Montes.
Me opongo totalmente a que los Estados Unidos siga con tropas en Irak o en el Medio Oriente, ¿verdad? Me opongo a que los Estados Unidos siga tratando de mantener no solamente tropas, pero controlar la economía, la política de países soberanos. Así es que yo demando ahorita que ya Estados Unidos retire todas las tropas de Irak, de esa área, y que deje que los países soberanos deciden su destino y resuelven sus problemas.
Corea Larriba, de la coalición antiguerra ANSWER.
Este último año ha sido bombardeo tras bombardeo con drones, con aviones, con su supuesta coalición de los países del Medio Oriente que son títeres de Estados Unidos, Qatar y Arabia Saudita y Jordania, que están creando con Estados Unidos y la OTAN la situación de matanza, tanta gente muerta, gente inocente, los Estados Unidos decidiendo quién puede ser ejecutado por el aire sin ningún juicio, sin ningún debido proceso. Entonces, esto es lo que está creando la crisis, el caos y la terrible situación en el Medio Oriente. Nosotros decimos en la coalición ANSWER, la coalición antiguerra, que hay que salir del Medio Oriente, retirar las tropas, retirar las presencias de Estados Unidos, retirar los contratistas, que son también parte del militar. Esa es la respuesta.
Siempre usan la mayor parte del dinero de Estados Unidos, de los impuestos que pagamos para guerras, para el Departamento de Defensa. Por eso me opongo. Ese dinero se debe invertir en las necesidades de la gente trabajadora, de la gente pobre. Ese dinero se debe usar para servicios humanos en Estados Unidos, y no para mandar tropas y para andar matando gente en todo el mundo. Alto a las intervenciones de Estados Unidos, que ese dinero se invierte en educación, en trabajos.
Esperemos de que lo que es el Estado Islámico, y hacemos un poco de investigación, vamos a ver que desde su fundación tiene mucho que ver con los Estados Unidos ahí, y es una reacción pues reaccionaria a la política militarista de los Estados Unidos, y creo que más inversión o más acción militar en esa región del mundo simplemente va a crear más guerra, más violencia y desafortunadamente obviamente más muertes para los pueblos árabes.
Es claro que después de 13 años ahora de guerra, uno puede pensar, no es útil, no sirve para nada protestar. Sin embargo, debemos recordar que el año pasado los congresistas y Obama fueron detenidos en sus planes de abiertamente derrotar al gobierno de Siria ilegalmente por bombas. Tuvo que pensar otros planes. Sin embargo, yo creo que con más tropas en la tierra, con más, más gasto, más muertes, y la respuesta que es inevitable, actos de terrorismo, que uno tiene que pensar, ¿de dónde vienen estos actos? Vienen de la oposición a la guerra. La gente está siendo sometido a bombardeo. Entonces tenemos que ir mucho más allá de nuestra situación, que parece pacífica en Estados Unidos, y estar en la calle, protestar. Yo creo que algún día el gobierno va a tener que retirar las tropas. Desgraciadamente, yo creo que vamos a ver más sufrimiento, más pobreza en este país, más gente muriendo de todo lo que viene de guerra.
Barack Obama señaló que la nueva o el nuevo presidente evaluarán los resultados obtenidos para luego decidir qué hacer después para lograr sus objetivos militares en contra del Estado Islámico. El 21 de marzo, manifestantes saldrán a las calles de varias ciudades de la Unión Americana para protestar contra el militarismo y el intervencionismo norteamericano. En Los Ángeles, yo soy Fernando Velázquez.
Venenos tus monólogos, tus discursos incoloros, no ves que no estamos solos, millones de polo a polo, al son de un solo coro, marcharé con el tono, con la convicción que basta de robo. Tu estado de control, tu trono podrido de oro, tu política y tu riqueza y tu tesoro, no. La hora sonó, la hora sonó. No permitiremos más tu doctrina del shock. La hora sonó, la hora sonó.
Estás escuchando el informativo Pacífica.
Te invitamos a que te unas a nuestras redes sociales por Twitter en info-pacífica o por Facebook bajo el nombre de nuestro productor Fernando Velázquez e Informativo Pacífica. Escucha el noticiero cada día de lunes a viernes en Pueblos Sin Fronteras, wordpress.com.
La gota cae, la bolsa, la toma, se toma, la máquina rota, la calle se raya, la calle no calle, de parte que está ella, todo lo quitan, todo lo venden, todo se lucra, la vida, la muerte, todo es negocio, bajo tu tonto semilla, Pascuala me...
Durante los 15 años de Revolución Bolivariana, el gobierno de Venezuela ha invertido cerca del 7% del Producto Interno Bruto en la educación y creado 31 universidades. Esto ha convertido a Venezuela en el segundo país con el mayor número de universitarios de América Latina. Asimismo, el gobierno bolivariano ofrece a jóvenes de otros países a estudiar gratuitamente en la Escuela Latinoamericana de Medicina Salvador Allende. La universidad cuenta con más de 1.700 alumnos de 44 países y 24 comunidades indígenas de Venezuela. Ángel Cedeño informa.
La Escuela Latinoamericana de Medicina es un gran centro multicultural. Aquí se hablan más de 50 idiomas. Estudiantes de América, África, Asia y Oceanía recorren sus pasillos desde 2007. Aulas abiertas a quienes jamás pensaron tener la oportunidad de estudiar medicina, como Mendibel y Simón. Ella es Guayú y él Jibi, ambos pueblos aborígenes de Venezuela, que comenzaron a ser visibles desde la Constitución de 1999. Oportunidad que agradecen para ayudar a sus pueblos.
Es una oportunidad muy grande, de por lo menos de esa comunidad soy yo la única que está ahorita estudiando. Y es algo muy grande. Yo voy todavía para allá y me dicen que estudie rápido porque necesitamos un médico. Y yo les digo que no es así porque estudiar medicina cuesta, le digo que me falta mucho. Entonces ya es como que un motivo más y que conchale, a mí eso me da un poquito más de motivación porque ya ellos dicen que yo soy la doctora de su comunidad.
Estar al servicio de la comunidad es su principal motivo. Es la nueva visión de la medicina que aspiran se consolide en cada promoción de esta casa de estudio.
En los años anteriores se han dificultado mucho para uno ingresar a una universidad, era muy difícil. Y entonces buscaba era los medios más accesibles para poder ingresar. Pero gracias a Dios y gracias a la revolución que se ha destacado a llegar a los sitios más remotos. Y nos ha dado la oportunidad de ingresar a esta escuela.
Universidad que aseguran siempre busca la máxima calidad educativa.
Nos estamos preparando muy bien, son buenos profesores. Nos estudian al máximo para llegar a nuestro pueblo como buenos médicos. Como entre 5 años, si Dios permite, llegar a ser, yo prefería no olvidarme de dónde vengo, primeramente, y tratar de contribuir todo lo necesario a mi pueblo.
Como parte del plan de becas de Yasser Arafat, el gobierno de Venezuela aprobó en 2014 1.000 becas para estudiantes palestinos. Así, esta casa de estudio busca seguir brindando oportunidades a los pueblos más necesitados del mundo.
El periodista Kit Daniels reporta que a petición del rey Abdullah de Arabia Saudita, los militares estadounidenses ponen microchips dentro del cuerpo de los prisioneros de Guantánamo antes de liberarlos. Esto con el fin de seguir después sus movimientos. Los chips son implantados en una parte del cuerpo que requeriría una operación masiva para removerla después, dice Daniels. Añade que en el 2010 la agencia Defense Advanced Research Project anunció que estaba estudiando microchips capaces de aliviar heridas traumáticas en el cerebro. 2 años después expandió su programa para monitorear la salud de los soldados en el campo de batalla. El neurocientífico Joseph Ledoux dijo a MIT Review que lo que quieren hacer es poner microchips en el cerebro. La Universidad de Stanford también está trabajando en una tecnología similar para aplicarla al público en general. Acota Daniels. En Costa Rica, cambios en el clima están provocando un incremento en los precios de los alimentos. Los compañeros de Radio Santa Clara con la información.
Los precios de alimentos como hortalizas, frutas y bebidas registraron en enero su mayor alza en los últimos 4 años. La causa está en el clima. fuertes vientos, exceso de humedad o altas temperaturas. El costo de estos productos creció más de un 7% a enero pasado, frente al mismo periodo del 2014. Según el Índice de Precios al Consumidor, divulgado por el Instituto Nacional de Estadística y Censos, INEC, las responsables del encarecimiento de precios del grupo de alimentos y bebidas no alcohólicas fueron las frutas y hortalizas, que alcanzaron casi el doble del índice de precios al consumidor. Dirigentes del sector agrícola justificaron el incremento al señalar las repercusiones sufridas por fenómenos climáticos. Hemos tenido sequías en unas partes del país, luego aguaceros y granizadas en otras, y en las últimas semanas fuertes ráfagas de viento, explicó Guido Vargas, secretario general de la Unión Nacional de Pequeños y Medianos Agricultores. Una versión que reafirma el pequeño horticultor costarricense Carlos Araya.
Han sido demasiadamente severos los daños en brócoli, coliflor, en papa, en culantro, en todo lo que uno tenía sembrado, porque hubieron partes de áreas sembradas y quedaron como un 25% de raso, otras partes casi nada. Y en vista de esto, ahora estamos sufriendo las consecuencias, pues, y poco producto para la feria y económicamente pues nos ha golpeado bastante a todos los agricultores.
Por su parte, Juan Rafael Lizano, presidente de la Cámara Nacional de Agricultura y Agroindustria, enfatizó que con la menor oferta de productos agrícolas se dio de inmediato el avance en los precios al consumidor. Desde Radio Santa Clara y te informó Yendi Agüero.
La solidaridad ciudadana en España logró detener que una familia de migrantes africanos fuera desalojada de su hogar. El padre de familia, Kenneth, se encuentra desempleado, como una cuarta parte de los trabajadores en España.
Kenneth apenas puede dormir hoy. En cuestión de horas pueden desahuciarlo. Hace unos años compró esta casa para su mujer y sus tres hijos. Durante años ha estado pagando, pero la crisis lo dejó en paro. Ahora ha peor el miedo tras esta.
Con policía. Esto es casa yo comprar con mi hijo. Y uno para yo tener puesta con el banco, y ya está, para no trabajar ahora, yo quiero pagar 100 euros todo el mes. Es su casa, yo no miento, es su casa mío.
Poco a poco son más los ciudadanos que se congregan para evitar el desalojo. La presión se hace fuerte en casa de este migrante, pero una llamada cambia el rumbo. El banco ofrece un alquiler social para esta familia en su propia casa. Finalmente aceptan la oferta de Kenneth.
Ha sido la presión de los ciudadanos, no ha sido la bondad de ningún banquero la que ha salvado a Kenneth. Ha sido los ciudadanos, los medios de comunicación. Y lo hemos conseguido después de 2 años luchando, porque Kenneth está luchando desde hace 2 años por mantener su casa.
Desde hace varios días, un grupo de ciudadanos del colectivo Stop Desahucio han apoyado a esta familia, que finalmente, junto a la presión de los movimientos sociales, han logrado paralizar el desalojo.
Y todo eso ha sido por la movilización, claro, si no vamos de piquete allí ni acá, si no nos organizamos para parar el desahucio, para hablar con los medios, para todas estas tareas, se convierte en un problema, digamos, individual y la gente termina en la calle y no se entra nadie.
Las historias de desahucios no suelen terminar con finales felices en España, pero en ocasiones la presión de los ciudadanos logra efectos en los bancos ante la falta de apoyo institucional. La presión ciudadana ha conseguido paralizar el desahucio de Kenneth, aunque esto tan solo ocurre en el 1% de los casos en España. Sergio Rodrigo, Telesur, Andalucía, España.
Hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. A nombre del compañero Toshli y del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Yes, indeed. 2 hours this February 12th with me and perhaps the occasional meditative comment from Dr. Mike, who's a recovered from his various injuries, or hopefully is recovering from his problems. And I, on the other hand, am becoming ill. I have a fever, and it's not much of one, but it's got me down a bit. So I may not be as, punchy and perky as usual, and forgive me for not being so, but that's just how it is. So welcome to Bathrobes Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned.
I'm tired of old songs, starring of new songs. They simply make me mad. And ditties romantic drive me to frantic. I think they're all full of crap. History's making, nations are quaking. Rising of stars above. For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you. Sing me of bores and sing me of bread lines. Tell me of front page news. Sing me of strikes and last minute headlines. Press your observation and sing no patience. Sing me a song with social significance. There's nothing else that will do. It must get hot with what is what, or I won't love you.
Sing me a song of social significance. Welcome to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert. And call-in number here in case you have updates, breaking news, grumbles, particularly some comments on the most recent stuff that's interesting me, the Bearcat sneak pass that the Santa Cruz Police Department pulled on the city and the city council after the city council pulled it on the rest of us. But the police department was behind it, which has recently, in the last few days, been the subject of first the city council protest, not, of course, a city council meeting. It's not been on the agenda. And then yesterday, there was a full auditorium in the large room at the Loudon Nelson Center, where there were four speakers talking about how the Bearcat has been rejected in other cities. Andrew Pritchard of Copwatch from Berkeley, Michael, whose last name I forget, another activist from Berkeley talked about, he's also some other Bay Area cities where they've been struggling to resist this militarization that is being dumped all over the country, apparently, on police departments. And just kind of, and then there were two activists from Santa Cruz, John Malkin, who has been pursuing this issue rather persistently in the last 2 months or more to determine where this all came from, when did the council learn about it, who made the initial moves to get the Bearcat, and so forth. So, in the, I guess there was a Sentinel writer in the audience, because there was a story in the Sentinel today, which I've got to admit I haven't read. I've been mostly sleeping today. And so I don't know what kind of coverage they gave. I'm not too hopeful, but maybe the headline looked pretty bad, and sort of, you know, community discusses Bearcat. They weren't discussing it. They were denouncing it. I mean, come on. That's what it was about. there, you know, I don't think we heard any positive comments about the Bearcat. Maybe there was a suggestion it be painted white and turned into a, I don't know, a rescue vehicle without any other equipment, which sounded to me like a ridiculous proposal, considering the cost of the thing, which even though we don't, the city does not directly pay for it, the community, the broader community of the United States does, and it funds more militarization, more Lemco Bearcats and so forth. So I'm going to be on radio station KSCO on Saturday at 10 o'clock in the KSCO Saturday special. That's a two-hour show that KSCO owner Michael Zwirling does on a topic of his choice. Usually it's riddled with commercials, and so you kind of, you know, you squeeze in some content between the commercials. And it's also got, Michael is looking for somebody who's pro-Bearcat. He hasn't been able to find anybody yet. Maybe he will. The people that I've suggested that will be coming in myself, and if I can't make it because of illness, Keith McHenry, the co-founder of Food Not Bombs, and Abby Samuels, and Courtney Hansen will be coming in to talk to the broader community about why we need to resist militarization. And I think the issue began to become clearer, was broader than the Bearcat at this meeting. And it's really an important issue that we aren't just talking about one vehicle. We're talking about a whole succession of things seen most vividly at a national level with the rising protests against the murder in Ferguson of Mike Brown and Eric Garner in New York and many others across the country by police officers who are then essentially unaccountable, not accountable for what they do, based upon the idea that they have very broad standards that allow them to shoot first and then justify later, which the DA does for them if they don't even bother to do it themselves. So, in Santa Cruz, we have a situation which I've been talking about on the radio for some time around, of course, the obvious, the harassment of homeless people, the disproportionate ticketing of homeless people for smoking, sitting, sleeping, a series of crimeless crimes that are actually attempts to make this area unwelcome for the homeless and part of a broader plan to gentrify both the downtown and the residential areas. And a plan, you know, I can't really say it's a plan in the sense that I've got the blueprints. I haven't got the documentation, but that seems to be the impact. And of course, the latest excuse for it is, or the one for the last couple of years, has been the public safety excuse or the public health excuse, and they're closing down the recycling centers. And that's an issue that I'm hoping that we can get pushback. Pat Colby has been doing a lot of research on the abusive closing of recycling centers that are used by everybody in the community, not just homeless people, but that are a target of groups like Take Back Santa Cruz and Rochelle Noroyan's Transportation Commission when she was on the commission. I think she chaired it. I'm not sure, but I think she did. Now she's on the city council. Anyway, Pat's been under the weather, too, as I understand it. I'm not sure if she'll be calling in today. I also had hoped to hear from Paul Cook, who's an activist in Baldwin Park. You may remember, those of you who've been following my show, that Paul has successfully taken on the mayor of Baldwin Park, or I should say the mayor has unsuccessfully taken him on when he tried to raise issues of, when he did raise issues of corruption in terms of his passion, which is, that is to say, Paul Cook's passion. Paul Cook is a boxing instructor. He's also an attorney who likes to fight for the underdog, so he says, and so I believe, considering his willingness to help us. And actually, I'm hoping we can actually get in touch with him. I'm going to try to do that soon. He was supposed to call in earlier, and he may have actually done that, but I was late in getting into the studio, so he may have called, and then I've missed him. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to play a few interviews from the street, which I've been really failing to do the last few shows. And this is about life on the streets. They're not edited. They're conversations with people who are out there. And you can judge for yourself of the worth or truth or whatever. And I occasionally make comments as well. And if you have comments about your experiences on the street or your experiences that you heard from friends that you want to talk about on the street, please do call in, 427-3772. And let's hear a little of this and maybe something from old Paul Cook if I can get a hold of him.
I'm down here in front of the Sub Rosa Cafe, and it's about 20 to 11 on the 4th of February. And Pineapple, you are politely waiting to smoke while you give an account of stuff that's happened.
Well, you know me, I am a frequent flyer. I come in once a year, but I don't understand. You get arrested for your first DWI in Santa Cruz County. 6 months in jail, automatically.
Did that happen to you?
Well, yeah.
Recently? Or
people that I know.
Okay.
Anyways, and you get arrested in San Francisco County. Well, up in San Francisco. Yeah, you go to jail automatically. Then you go up to Sonoma County, which is skipping Marin County. I'll get back to that. You go up to Sonoma County, you get arrested for one DUI. I mean, you're talking driving while intoxicated. You go to jail 6 months. Marin County, however, is like a Lucas Foundation county, like George Lucas, like world. You get a DWI in Marin County, you go in front of a TV screen, and they let you go without reporting to nobody and paying a $52 fine, which you have 3 years to pay.
Wow, interesting.
I don't understand that. Is that what they call the scales of justice? Seems to me one outweighs the other.
Well, you know, in the halls of justice, the only justice is in the halls.
You know what they say is when you're walking through the hall and your balls drag the wall, that's a rupture.
Hear, hear. Anything happened in Santa Cruz since you were back?
No.
Any reports from Santa Cruz folks about stuff that's happened? You know,
they
came
in from...
Where from?
Brought them in from up
Santa
north.
Santa Rosa.
And what's happening up there, man?
A lot just sitting out here, but more laid back.
Any hassles, tickets, citations?
Yeah, camping.
And what do they do with camping tickets up in Santa Rosa?
You get 30. You don't pay, you get 30 days in jail.
And what do you have to pay? What's the fine?
$250.
And how many tickets did you get in the last year?
Three.
And what did you do with them?
Tore them up.
Here, here. What's your name?
Joshua Covas.
Hey, Joshua. And who is this dog?
His name is Pork Rind.
And Pork Rind, what do you have to say about this? Pork Rind's keeping a lid on things. Anything you'd like to say?
No, I don't really have anything to say, no.
Okay, well, you're taking care of Pork Rind. I see that.
Yeah.
And you should carry him around.
Oh, yeah.
So have you two had any troubles here in Santa Cruz, or you just arrived?
No, we just arrived, but we had our stuff stolen here a couple days ago.
What stuff, how much, that sort of thing?
It was a $40 cage for my dog, just keep him in, and my tent worth $100, and my clothes and a backpack.
Now, is this for your first time? Sorry to hear it, by the way, man. I mean, you know.
And our blankets got stolen.
So, where'd you sleep last night, if you want to reveal your secret location?
That's good.
Yeah,
my friend here took me to the graveyard.
My secret spot.
The secret graveyard. Okay. I mean, actually, probably not so secret, but...
You know where it's at, back up in
I do. I,
Harvey West.
And no hassles since you've been here?
No outside little incident.
But that's, a couple days back?
Right? Yeah.
All right, anybody else have anything you want to say, man?
Yeah, I've had 7 tickets within the last month.
Here in Santa Cruz?
Yeah, I just got here within this month, Santa Cruz, and I've already had 7 camping tickets.
And where more or less, if you don't, without revealing your current spot and if you want to avoid?
I stay everywhere. I stay on Highway 1, I stay on the beach. Last time, police were letting me sleep on the beach, now they're giving tickets. I woke up late at night to please give me a ticket. And I was staying over by Highway 1, a spot I used to come to for years and years. I wake up late at night, I'm getting a ticket. So I had to, like, go way up in the hills somewhere where I can hide so I won't get a ticket where it's uncomfortable. And then I came back down to the beach to visit Megan at the beach. We spent the night, had a great beach party, woke up late at night, and got a ticket. That was ticket number 7 for me.
Did you get stay-away orders as well, or just tickets?
I'm just forgetting tickets so far.
And who have been the main people? Rangers, cops, county sheriffs?
Santa Cruz Police.
Santa Cruz Police. And do you want to say who you are for our records?
Yes, I'm David Landworth.
James?
David Landworth.
And what's been your experience in Santa Cruz? You've been here a number of years before.
Oh, yes, yes.
How long were you?
I've lived here before a lot of time. I'm from San Francisco in Alameda County.
What's your tie with Santa Cruz? What brings you here?
It's bohemian groove movement that I dig here.
The bohemian sense groove. Of Santa Cruz?
It's bohemian groove.
It's the groove. Isn't it the grove and the groove?
It's bohemian groove.
I see. Well, thank you, I guess.
There's marijuana, of course.
Well, there's marijuana throughout the state, particularly up north.
I like it here. Yeah. I like it here. It is a good place to get high at, Santa Cruz. I'm not paranoid, it's liberal, and it's bohemian, and, it's a groove thing.
It's an enabling environment.
Yes, it is. Yes, that's what I call it, an enabling environment.
And I
thrive on it.
Did he also let you know that he comes from a multi-billion-dollar family?
Yeah, right. Yeah,
Your money? Show me your money,
Mr. Pineapple. I'm just a broke poor man that worked for minimum wage. Now I get SSI, so I feel rich.
Okay.
Thank you. We've been talking with
David Edward Landworth,
and we've also been talking with
Seattle
Pineapple, and finally from Santa Rosa, speaking with
Joshua Covis.
And with? You don't have to say.
No, that's okay.
Fair enough. All right, thanks, everybody. So these are sort of some random interviews. We'll have a few more. And again, I'm looking for people to do two things. First, bring their tickets to the Food Not Bombs table, which is every Saturday and Sunday at the main post office from 4 to 6. And also, there's the Red Church meal, which is from 6 to 7 at Center and Lincoln Streets, actually Cedar and Lincoln Streets, Calvary Episcopal Church. Or the Huff Meeting, which meets every Wednesday from 11 to 1. And or if you see me around, you know, I'm this old guy with a beard. Or there are a lot of us, I guess. But you can also leave your tickets at the Sub Rosa Cafe. And actually, what we want you to do is not just leave your tickets. We need you to fill out a claim form against the city. And the reason for that is that you are being awakened and deprived of sleep without being given a legal place to go in a city that has shelter for less than 10% of its unhoused population. And it's simply a form of abuse, particularly if you're disabled, as many folks are in one way or another. And so the thing we need to do is to, every time this happens, file a claim against the city for $2,500, which is the kind of the amount that apparently somebody was able to receive. Okay. And so we are, you know, hoping that we can, we actually have already turned in 4 tickets from 3 people, and they were on the agenda, I think I mentioned this, of the Santa Cruz City Council's closed session last time. I'm wondering, this microphone is not working too well, is it? Let's see here. Okay. So, the idea is after these claims are rejected. And so far, we haven't gotten a rejected claim, but that means they're just stalling because they're not going to pay $2,500 per incident of sleep deprivation. It's just not going to happen. Not because it isn't a reasonable amount, considering what they're doing, but because it would put them in a position where they'll have to stop enforcing the sleeping ban, which, of course, is our point. So if you want to help in this new approach, leave, if you can, ask the Sub Rosa folks, and that's a cafe right next to the bike church at 703 Pacific, for a copy of a claim form and a, there's actually 2 documents. One of them is a smaller document, one of them is a longer document. They're not very hard to fill out. Or just come to the Food Not Bombs table and talk to a Huff representative. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and we're often there. Food Not Bombs activists are also becoming aware of this situation and wanting to be helpful. So hopefully that is
going to make a difference in the days ahead. We'll see. In fact, one of the things I'm going to be playing today is the speeches that I and activist Becky Johnson used Tuesday, day before yesterday, at the City Council when the issues came up on the closed agenda at the City Council. Closed agenda means you don't get to hear what they're talking about. You just get to make your little spiel at the beginning, and then they all kind of troop behind closed doors and chat about personnel and legal issues or whatever else they would choose to talk about under the guise of personnel and legal issues. And you can't squeeze anything out of the council members because they'll say, oh, it's illegal for us to talk to you. So I, you know, could well be. But the question I asked Micah Posner, council member who showed up at the Huff meeting yesterday, was, which is more important, you know, the community's greater good or, you know, you're sticking to a legal system that is, well, it's a hard thing to ask someone to do. And actually, I know, I'm skeptical of people who use the law as their excuse for keeping city council activity quiet. But we'll talk more about this, and if you have thoughts on these issues, you can call in, 427-3772. I've left a message with Paul Cook. He's not apparently at his home or cell phone. Maybe he's busy. Maybe he's going to call in another day. I don't think he's going to call in today. So we'll see how that goes. I do have a lot of audio that I want to play, and I'm not going to have time to play even a fraction of it today because I've been audioing a lot of different things, council meetings, forums on the Bearcat, and interviews with people on the street. So we'll do what we can. The other thing I should say is that today is the D-Day for the stay-away order law. It goes into effect today. It's a month after it was passed by the City Council. And now, if you have if you've gotten stay-away orders in the last year, even for only a day, and they could only give it to you for a day up until today, if you've gotten three in the last year, the next stay-away order they give you, for the most minor infraction, smoking, being in a park after dark, sleeping, will be an automatic six-month stay-away. Pretty serious, pretty heavy. And we're also interested in helping people challenge this. They don't allow a court process, but we want the community to be able to see the kind of abuse that the City Council is heaping on the backs and on the heads of poor and homeless people, because there is a process that they've cooked up, which is essentially a kind of token process that they hope will get them past the courts, where you can appeal this stay-away order to an agent of the city manager, who is the real boss of Santa Cruz. You might have thought it was the mayor, you might have thought it was the city council, you might have thought it was the police chief. Nah, it's the city manager, Martin Bernal. He gets the biggest salary. He is immune from firing unless the city council, you know, gets an incredible set of cojones. No city manager in Santa Cruz in recent memory has ever been fired. It's a position for life. Anyway, his agent will be hearing, according to the new law, appeals saying, you know, why are you making me stay away for 6 months for smoking a cigarette in the Poganip, you know, or in a distant part of San Lorenzo Park when nobody else is around? And unfortunately, reasonable arguments will not be allowed. The only argument that they will allow is whether you violated the particular law that you were charged with. And that violation, normally, you know, they have to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt, which is supposedly a strong standard, actually, given the pro-police makeup of the courts in terms of judges. You don't get a jury trial on this stuff. The judge makes these decisions. It's not very high a standard, but it's certainly a higher standard than the one that's written into this law, which is preponderance of the evidence, 50%, 51% of the evidence. So unless you can prove, rather than they prove you're guilty, you have to prove you're innocent. And you have to prove you're innocent of the infraction. So even if the infraction has nothing to do with a six-month stay-away order, you're screwed. And what we want to do is we want to make this, as frankly, as loud a noise and as large a stink as we can about this, to let the community know what the city manager's office is doing with their money and what they're doing to the poorest people in Santa Cruz. So we actually yesterday at the forum, the Bearcat forum, I was out there with petitions looking for people to sign up to volunteer to help out with this. And if you want to help this, do give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Leave your name and number or your email, and we'll find some way to get you involved, either doing some tabling, being available to go with a person who is appealing this crap at the city manager's office as these stayaways start to roll in. And, you know, we will try to publicize it in a way that clarifies just exactly how regressive, reactionary, and brutal the Santa Cruz city management has become. So, let's turn now to some more interviews. Let's see what I've got here. This looks like it could be something. Let's give this a try.
Well, I'm down here on Pacific Avenue. It's about 8:15 on February 4th. It might be about the rink, 5th, actually. We have a man dancing downtown. Sir, do you have a permit for this particular step?
Yes, sir.
And can you, what is this double-barreled, extremely long vehicle we're standing next to here?
This is the Peace Train of Santa Cruz, California. And we are... Only month that I have to be black is February. I'm black in February.
Black History Month.
Black History Month.
Rest of the year, you're...
Rest of the year, I don't know who I am.
I see, you're a bit confused.
They called me this morning and asked me what I was doing for Black History. This man, you ain't called me all year and you're going to ask me, oh, that's right, I'm black this month.
Well, you get your special... So, Martin Luther King Day once a year, Black History Month once a year.
So I'm downtown celebrating Black History Month.
Now, do you have a permit for the amplified music coming out of your vehicle?
Yeah, I got a permit from God. Saying,
from on
follow
high.
My heart.
And that is, in fact, what's written on your truck.
Be compassionate and loving and caring and invite people in to journey on a journey of kindness.
Have the police been treating you kindly recently?
They just stay away because I get to hollering at them.
I see. You.
I shout it out.
You don't suffer fools kindly?
You know, no. I belch it out like I preach it.
All right. Now, when was the last time you were approached by men in blue and women in blue?
Martin Luther King Day.
Oh!
I had a sound permit, and they shut it down.
How did that happen? Tell me about it.
They had, man, the store owner, Joe's Pizza.
Right.
Don't go shopping at Joe's Pizza. I went just parked right there.
He didn't remember you were there.
I was parked there. No, man, okay, I move up. Get out of his way. Then Robert and a bunch of more people inviting to listen
walked
to
by him.
Luther
I think
King.
I saw you there. Yeah.
You did, yeah. And we planned Martin Luther King speaking about peace and love and
Pacific Avenue.
And do you know them folks came back and turned it down? And the Gap. The Gap, Joe's Pizza, don't go there.
And so how long were you allowed to remain on Pacific Avenue?
Well, I just turned it off. I respect them. I turned it off. I had 4 hours, but I didn't do but an hour.
So wait a minute. You had a permit for 4 hours, but Joe's Pizza insisted on your turning down the music?
Yeah, and he was going to write me a ticket himself, a citizen ticket.
He deputized himself to write you a ticket,
yeah.
Well,
that's what
never
tell me.
Maybe the pizza makes you a law enforcement official.
Man.
Special kind of pizza.
It's got to be a new way, Rob. It's got to be a new way.
Yeah, I agree.
Rob, I would talk, but I need to...
You need to dance. You got to just... You better keep moving. That's right. We've been listening to that dancing man.
Curtis Relaford.
Thank you,
Follow
Curtis.
Your heart. ActionNetwork.com.
All right.
Curtis has the double long series, kind of a double vehicle that you could see around. It's Martin Luther King's picture is on it. There are other notables. I think Malcolm X is either pictured or mentioned. And indeed it is. February is Black History Month. So it's a... it's interesting. On Martin Luther King Day, Joe's Pizza would attempt to shut him down. Now, I wasn't there. I don't know how loud the music was, but... you know, it's interesting. I think he probably would have had a case, but he was intimidated into shutting down. Now, I was mocking the idea of deputizing a citizen. A citizen can make an arrest in the sense that she or he can either take someone into custody for a misdemeanor if they see it happening, or call a police officer and have a police officer issue them an infraction ticket. That happened to me 4 or 5 years ago in front of Bookshop Coonerty, when I was singing the song Downtown with a couple of others, and the guy upstairs at 3 o'clock in the afternoon decided he didn't like it, and he told us, he didn't even wait for us to be quiet, he just called the police and cited us for unreasonably disturbing noise. We actually lost that case in court because it seemed to me that the judge, well, we won't get into that long details of that, but you can find it online. If you look for the song Downtown, if you look up Robert Norris on Santa Cruz Indie Media, you can go back to 2010 and find that whole mishmash. It was the longest infraction trial that I've, as far as I know, in Santa Cruz County, certainly my longest. It lasted for, God, 5, 6, 7 days. We had many, many witnesses. An attorney was involved, as well as people testifying on their own behalf. And the judge ended up cooking up a notion that we had had a conspiracy to disturb this guy's sleep, which, of course, we had not at all. We were, you know, we were protesting the bookshop Coonerty. Ryan Coonerty, now supervisor, was on the city council, and he was engaging in his usual abuse under color of constitutional law. He's a guy who's a constitutional lawyer, teaches classes, or did, up at UC and Cabrillo, and then, you know, cuts out the Constitution in Santa Cruz. His most famous law was the parking lot panic law, or the parking garage paranoia law, which makes it illegal to sit in your own vehicle and read a book, even if you've paid, if it's a pay lot, or you just happen to be sitting there legally parked. That's illegal. And unless you simply, you're only allowed to park or retrieve your vehicle. You have 15 minutes to do it, unless you're disabled, in which case you have half an hour, or you can walk directly through. So it's a way of essentially crushing the right of public assembly in government parking lots. Hasn't been challenged. I think there was a similar law in Berkeley of a different, slightly different sort, but in any case, that's another story. So, what I'm going to be playing for you here, more of this, is, to me, it's also a racial thing with Curtis Relaford. I mean, Curtis is African-American, and maybe it's not that racial. Maybe the guy who runs Joe's Pizza, nothing against, I kind of like the guy who's been friendly to me, but when businesses start impinging on the rights of the community on the sidewalk, particularly activists, then I get cranky. You know, there's no question about it. And so if you're going to patronize Joe's Pizza, ask if if they're going to be, trying to move out and stop African-American activists on Martin Luther King Day from engaging in playing music about these issues, as he did, even when they have a permit. Because it's frankly, and I haven't talked to the guy involved, Jim, I'm sure he's not Joe. Joe died, the guy who originally started Joe's Pizza. Anyway, let's hear some more from the Pacific Avenue scene on the 5th of February.
You need paper?
That's something I need, a good number.
And indeed, this is a long vehicle with a large display of Black History Month. And written on the side of the double long vehicle, Be the Change You Wish to See in the World. And the second part of it is Be Yourself. There's something you can do better than any other. Pictures of John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, Abraham Lincoln, Mother Teresa, Mahatma Gandhi, somebody I don't recognize, some guy with a, looks like a Native American guy. Only after the last tree has been cut down, only after the last river has been poisoned, only after the last fish has been caught, only then will you find that money cannot be eaten. And on the sidewalk, there's a large display device with which seeks money. Not inside a bracketed and permitted area, I would like to point out. And we're going to take a brief musical break here, and I'm going to play a little something that I haven't played for a long time. It's from an old musical called Subways Are for Sleeping. So don't go away. Then we'll come back to Curtis Relaford's futile attempt to maintain First Amendment standards on the sidewalks of Santa Cruz. that's the orchestral beginning of Subways Are for Sleeping. You'll be able to hear more of that, or perhaps forced to hear more of that, later in the show. Unless I can find something else I want to play. Let's continue with interviews on the street from February 5th on Pacific Avenue. We were talking with Curtis Relaford of Follow Your Heart. And on the sidewalk, there's a large display device with which seeks money. Not inside a bracketed and permitted area, I would like to point out. And, of course, right next to it is an illegal sign from Shogun Japanese Restaurant, which is interesting. So, yeah, that's what's happening down on Pacific Avenue tonight, before the rain. Really kind of quite interesting. The although police were not harassing Curtis at that point, he and Shogun, the restaurant, Japanese restaurant downtown across from the cinema, I guess it's the Del Mar Cinema, were violating the ordinances and getting away with it at the moment. Of course, businesses, I'm told, never heard of a business getting a citation for leaving their freestanding signs out. Sometimes day and night, although I haven't really checked at midnight to see if the signs are still there, but they're there during the day. They obstruct passage. Well, you can walk around them, so they're not that obstructive, but they are illegal, according to the actual ordinances, according to the planning department or the public works. I'm not sure which one. I contacted some months ago. And actually, Huff thought at some point of turning this into a basis for action, as going in and advising the merchants that if they want to have the privilege of occupying the sidewalk with their signs, we want them to support the privilege of human beings occupying the sidewalk with their bodies at different times, provided neither are obstructing the passageway. And that's a possibility. Contact Huff if you want to be a part of such a project. We have all kinds of ideas, but not too much in the way of people to implement them. So, maybe a little more here. We will do it. So we're talking with
Flo.
And Flo, you were at the Camp of Last Resort meeting last night.
Yes, I was. I was taken by the compassion of a rabbi who wants to find solution. I think we all want solution about the homeless situation in Santa Cruz. Business owners are frustrated, so frustrated that they've lost their compassion. There's a lot of work to be done to take care of everyone. What we give is what we will get back.
How long have you been? Are you a Santa Cruzan yourself?
Yes, I've been raising my son here since 1998, and it's a wonderful town. We can do it. We can all work together to make this place a great place like it is. But the law of the universe is you have to give to receive. The homeless themselves will have to follow some guidelines in order to have an identity within this community.
I think they have an identity anyway, but you mean not to be beaten into the dust by the Parks and Rec Department?
Yes, we need to treat everyone. Everyone needs to treat one another with respect.
And we've been talking with
Flo.
Thank you, Flo. You know, and I have a usual response to this approach, which is there was a forum the night before with featuring Steve Plaich, Raven Davis, and Phil Posner, who is a rabbi. In spite of that, I will continue to treat him with respect. The room was filled. It was a smaller room at the Loudon Nelson Center, and we passed around different sign-up lists, and a number of people signed up. And this was actually, I guess, a week ago. There's a lot of things that have been happening in the last few weeks, at least in terms of people getting together and talking about issues, which, if it leads to action, is a great thing. If it doesn't, it's simply a way of blowing off steam and doesn't help really at all. In fact, the opposite. It tends to garner false hopes that then, you know, get dissipated. The idea of compassion being the issue here. I mean, compassion is always an issue, for sure. But to me, it's justice. You know, you don't. It's not whether you feel compassionate towards people on the streets. It's whether they are, as human beings, are entitled to certain basic rights, whether you like them or not, whether you feel compassionate that day or not. So waiting around for compassion is not my thing. Although I understand that, you know, it is, it forms the basis of religious traditions. Compassion, it can be a very good thing, you know. I mean, nothing against it. But justice is the first issue. And I see, I have to compassionately ask what this guy who was raising his hand on the studio wants to say. What's up, Mike?
Well, I have a question for you. Is compassion the basis of justice, or is justice the basis of compassion?
Neither.
Well, I don't know. One is, seems to be from the mind, and that's justice. And then the other one is from the heart, compassion.
Well, justice is equal treatment of people fairly, equal distribution of resources, respecting the rights of people, and has nothing to do with how you feel.
I don't know. I disagree with that. I think justice actually comes out of compassion, tell you the honest truth, because compassion is a broader and deeper experience.
Actually, justice comes when people rebel against the lack of justice, usually. You see this, you know, historically in different societies, whether it's Greece overthrowing, you know, the previous political systems, whether it's Rome overthrowing the king, whether it's, you know, revolutions in France and America. Justice comes when people demand it, not when they suddenly decide it's time to be more compassionate.
But, yeah, that's probably true. But
mostly it has to do with their own interests. I mean, you know, it's sort of an upper middle class or an upper class notion that, you know, I can speak for those people who are below me, whose experience I don't experience. It's not, things don't really happen until the people below say, fuck this shit, get off our heads. And it's not a matter of, I want you to have more compassion for me.
No, but I understand. I understand that. But
give us an equal share.
But the thing is, what it boils down to, these people who rebel, what it boils down to is sensitivity. If these people don't have the sensitivity that goes along with compassion, they're not going to rebel. They're not going to even know that they're being manipulated. So when they have awareness and compassion and sensitivity, they feel these injustices in their system, and eventually they build up and rebel. You know, I'm from Ireland. I've seen it in Ireland, in Northern Ireland. I've been there.
The Irish rebellions came out of compassion. I don't think so. I think they came out of anger.
Yeah, anger and the injustice.
And that's different than compassion.
All right. Well, we can drop compassion. We can say sensitivity, because the people who actually rebelled, I mean, I forgot her name now. She was only like 15 or 16-year-old girl who led the rebellion. And those young people have sensitivity. They can feel these injustices in their system. And that's what builds up, and it eventually explodes. I was there with them, beside them, when they were throwing the rocks at the police. So I've seen it.
Did you have compassion for the police?
No. And I don't have much compassion for the police.
You've got to have compassion for the
police. No, no.
I mean, they're just trying to do their job, aren't they?
You know what I have compassion for is innocent, regular people. You know, the Joe Soaps, the regular people.
Good for you. Yeah,
and
I'm being
I understand, but
and, I'm being
and there's too much ignorance in behind the blue uniform. It's not as shiny if you look at the star.
My point, though, you see, is when we're listening to this woman speaking about these issues on the street and the camp of last resort, which Phil Posner is proposing, and you know, and you've got to have rules, and these people got to be regulated, you know. Would they feel that way about people in houses? You know, you have to be regulated if you're in a house, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and it's bullshit. It is attempt to put them in a special category based upon a series of stereotypes and fears.
Yeah.
And there's actually a compassionate motivation, though. The compassionate motivation is, we're only going to get this passed if we treat these people like sort of one step up from subhumans who can be controlled. They won't be taking drugs.
I agree
they
with you.
Won't put them in tents or make sure that they're not engaging in illegal and illicit behavior, so that Take Back Santa Cruz and other drug warriors won't be squawking around. So
there's a certain amount of fear of the establishment involved in all that kind of restrictive behavior. I agree with you. It's not pure compassion.
I think nonetheless, I mean, I support, you know, any of these proposals.
Of course.
Whether it's Sanctuary Village from Brent or Camp Last Resort from, you know, Phil Posner, and I think, you know, they because they're recognizing and acknowledging the I wouldn't call it a first step, even. I don't think it's even a first step, but I think it is an acknowledgement of the need, mm-hmm. in a certain way. And insofar as once you start talking about that need, you can't really start limiting it. And it's, I think it's going to be made really clear what people really need. So, hear a little more. Do you have anything else you want to say, Mike?
No, that's enough for the moment.
And you can call in if you want to join this scintillating discussion at 427-3772. I did get an email from Paul Cook, Baldwin Park attorney. He'll be calling in on Sunday. Or so he says. Mm. We'll see if he calls in.
Done.
Paul has also agreed to help me with a lawsuit against our former mayor, Lynn Robinson. You may remember, all you old-timers have been around for the last year, and some of you new-timers just happen to listen to this show regularly. I was arrested and taken out of the council meeting because I insisted on replacing my little tape recorder where the mayor said it shouldn't be. And I wasn't talking about, you know, under somebody's dress or, you know, hanging and swinging from the ceiling or anything outrageous. I'm talking about in the place it always was. So I have filed a claim against the mayor, and I have to take her to small claims court probably in the next 2 months. And hopefully we get Paul Cook's assistance on this, and anyone else who wants to volunteer to help, step right up. Give me a call at 423-4833.
I didn't get why you're taking her to court again. What was the
damages? First Amendment violations, search and seizure, Brown Act violations. I mean, you name it. I was I was, you know, denied access to a council meeting as a media member. I was held by a police officer. I wasn't physically abused, but you know, it was a way of deterring me from a job that I think needed to be done in order to give people who are listening to these shows my perspective on what's going on.
Incidentally, I just remembered the name of the young lady who led the rebellion in Northern Ireland. Her name is Bernadette Devlin, and you could probably find information on YouTube about her. But she was only 16 or 17.
I remember.
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
She was only 16 or 17 when...
I remember her name. She survived, too. She's
still alive.
She's still around. She was a parliament member.
Well, eventually she did get there, but initially she was just a rebel, just like you or anybody else. But I'm saying that she was only 16 or 17.
Right.
At that age, you're sensitive. You're a sensitive person to these things.
Some people are sensitive, and some people are. It depends on what you're sensitive to. But in any case, so I should say that what happened at the last city council meeting, which was 2 days ago, I wasn't there for most of it. I did show up, and I'm hoping to play either today or Sunday the presentation that I and Becky Johnson made on behalf of, well, in support of, the homeless people who filed the sleeping deprivation claims for $2,500 each, which were being looked at in the back room without the public being allowed to see the claims, which I regarded as abusive, and I was told later that Micah Posner, a council member, said that wouldn't be done again, but he wasn't clear as to whether it wouldn't be done again because that's a complicated issue that I can't really easily describe here, but my point is that anything that's put on an agenda in the Santa Cruz City Council, whether on the open session or the closed session, needs to be accessible to public comment. Now, if it's a litigation or personnel matter, that public comment can come at the beginning of the meeting so they can all go and hide in the back and talk about it privately later. But in order to have that public comment be productive, you have to have the documents available. And they told us, well, they're just going to be discussing it. They haven't come to any decision, and therefore we don't need the documents. And then it'll appear on another agenda, and you'll be able to see the documents in 2 weeks. And I said, no, we're making our presentation today. What are you talking about? We want the documents before. And Bren Lehr, the city administrator, said, no, you can get them through a Public Records Act request, which takes 10 days. This is an example of the intransigence of the city. Although they've gotten a little better in some respects, they continue to either use this form of bureaucratic, I don't know what I call it, it's a form of ossification. It's a form of, they're kind of frozen in place, or else they're defending their own privileges. I don't think it's some kind of conspiracy of any sort, but I think it is a practice which is abusive toward the public. Anyway, let's hear a little more from the street and a little more babble from me and maybe a little babble from you. 427-3772.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You should be on free radio. We're talking with a man who plays a very special instrument. What instrument is that?
I play the handpan.
It's a kind of a very kind of a, has a Buddhist sound to it, actually.
In some kind of reckless Kerouac kind of way. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. It's a very calming, peaceful instrument.
It's
yeah.
Almost like a gong.
Yeah, absolutely. It has a nice gong kind of resonance to it.
And I know you got one ticket a month or two back that, you know, you were rather upset with it, as I remember. And then, but more recently, you found solace where the Homeless Garden Project's alley was, where you were actually invited to play?
Yeah, I was invited to play. This is actually over the span of about a year from the ticket, but I was invited by the Homeless Garden Project itself. Someone was handing out lavender out here on Pacific Avenue and said, please come and play by the store so we could draw people. And one of the hairdressers at the salon across from there had asked me to come and play as well because the acoustics in there are fabulous. And I was told that they want to start bringing in music into the courtyard area at the entrance to the museum there.
Abbott Square,
where the fountain is. So I was going early in the morning, like 8 a.m., and playing very softly in that hall and then out with the birds and the fountain in the Abbott Square courtyard. And there's a really nice officer lately. His name's Angel. And Angel is sent to come out every morning and ask me to move and tell me that it's private property. And I told him I was invited to, and he said that I would need permission from all four businesses, meaning the one yet to be across from It's Sugar, then the salon, and...
And all future businesses
as
well.
Yeah, of course. And he said that... And all he had to say about the courtyard was that it was private property. Now, he almost seemed embarrassed to me that he had to do it, but he did it with a straight face because it's his job, you know, and it's not him that... It could change any of that. So I got a card. I forget the gentleman's name. I have the gentleman. Yeah, Angel gave me a card of the gentleman.
So the fact that he politely took away your rights is something that hence prompts you to be very genteel in your description of it. His manner of rights destruction was very sweet and good-natured.
It's an interesting way to look at it. I didn't assign him that power. But he was the instrument, I guess, of that executive order from the Power 50.
He was just following orders.
He was just...
And get hear more of this later, because on the line with us is... why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Jason Hain. I'm a tenant lawyer in San Francisco.
Excellent. You were taking...
And a local of Santa Cruz, so...
are you following in Ted Gullickson's footsteps?
There is a new legislative efforts going on right now. I mean, of course, the fight never ends. That was a big loss. He'll be missed for sure.
Ted was the head of the Santa Cruz Tenants Union. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
And you are.
Yeah, it was very all of a sudden. It was very sad.
Well, I remember him from years ago. I haven't had much contact with him since, but. I know that that Cynthia from Tenants Together asked you to call in. What specifically are you focusing on that is, well, this relevant to Santa Cruz? I know that Santa Cruz has far less protection, if there are any protections anyway, in San Francisco for renters. I guess there are some. But what you got for us?
There's all kinds of state laws that protect people statewide. Against discrimination. I have to say I have gotten quite a few calls from people facing evictions down there that are claiming that they're discriminatory, and it does sound like landlords, they kind of do feel like there's not that many regulations for, the tenancy market outside of rent-controlled jurisdictions like San Francisco. They'll often do these kind of things where they violate the tenant's rights, try to get them out by doing various things, intimidation, utility shut off. Any of that kind of stuff that's eviction related is going to be covered. And then of course habitability standards. If you're on Section 8, there's whole other array of, laws that come into play to protect you. And it's also good because you get your place inspected automatically every year. So if you feel like you are being abused, do not just sit back and say, oh, well, too bad, I'm not, you know, there's no just cause for eviction ordinance. You really should consider calling somebody because you might just be protected.
I hear you. I know that in Santa Cruz, though, you have a situation where there's, you know, this new rental inspection or old rental inspection ordinance in which, you know, people are living in, you know, admittedly rather dingy circumstances, but they're afraid of, you know, informing the authorities because then they're afraid the authorities will red tag and they will essentially lose their below par but relatively cheap housing. What's your reaction to that?
Yes, well, the Department of Building Inspections in San Francisco is adopting a new policy where they are not forcing the landlord right away to take the unit out of housing if it's an illegal unit in law. Of course, in San Francisco, you always have relocation benefits, but they'd rather just keep, you know, more housing options open. So they're giving the landlord more time to try to see if he can bring the place up to code, even though it wasn't originally, you know, legally used as a dwelling.
Santa Cruz, we have elaborate codes, which I think they're stiffer than state law. This is not my area.
You know, I'm not familiar with any Santa Cruz local ordinances that provide additional protections.
No, not protection. Requirements that landlords meet.
I always tell people in Santa Cruz that it's just based on state law, that's their recourse.
Really? Well, I know that there's been a lot of controversy at city council meetings demanding a change in the local laws that they say are prohibiting, essentially.
Hello?
I'm here. Can you hear me? Hello? Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry. I couldn't hear the last two things you said.
Okay. Now, I'm saying that in the Santa Cruz City Council, recently, there's been a lot of debate, or a lot public protest against the planning department, or I'm not sure if it's the zoning, I think it's the planning department, that essentially has ordinances that, well, the requirements for habitability are harsher, as I understand it, than state law. I could be wrong. Maybe you know, you found out, have you researched this yourself? I don't...
No, I have not, but I mean, there are local codes in counties, but as far as I'm concerned, they basically just mirror the state code. But yeah, when an inspector comes out, they will cite to both the state code and the local, municipal code housing section.
So your suggestion to folks is who?
Hello?
Right here. Can you hear me?
Oh.
Your suggestion to folks who face abusive conditions...
Sorry, I was getting another call. Back on.
All righty. Are you ready? You want to keep going? How you doing? Hello? Okay, well...
Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. So your suggestion to folks who are facing abuses is to contact authorities in San Francisco because we don't have a lot of help here in Santa Cruz.
Oh, well, I practice down there. I personally don't know any other tenant lawyers down there. Don't have a big network down there, but I myself, you know, as a Santa Cruz local, even though I don't live down there anymore, I'm happy to help people out. I definitely have a few cases down there and happy to take on more.
So are we talking about free legal help or are you requiring payment?
So I will charge people a $300 retainer if I decide that from what they tell me and from what they show me in the documents that they have a claim, I'll charge them $300 if they want to sue their landlord. And then that buys them the contract with me where, you know, everything else that I get from the landlord is I'll just get a contingency. And it's 33%, so... it works out pretty well for the tenant in the end, actually.
So it's sort of a 30, it's a contingency fee. You get, if you win,
yeah.
You get
and then I give the $300 back.
And you give the $300
yeah,
back?
Yeah, if there's, of course, more than $300 in the entire settlement, which, of course, there will be.
If people can find $300, of course, it's problematic for some. But you wanted to leave a number or an email or a way you can be reached?
Yeah. So my number is 831-227-6892. And then I have an email as well, jason@jasonhainlaw.com. And Hain is spelled H-A-I-N.
Okay, it's jason@jasonhain.com, and it's 227, let's see here, let me,
what's 6892.
One more time? 6892?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good news, Jason. I appreciate that you're putting yourself out there. It sounds pretty reasonable. How long have you been doing this for?
So I've got licensed in January 2014, so I've been practicing ever since then exclusively in tenants' rights law. So even though I haven't been licensed and practicing really that long, just because I've specialized, I pretty much, you know, there's no more surprises for me at this point.
So how many cases are you currently taking on?
Well, I have like 7 lawsuits right now that are already filed in San Francisco Superior, or in various Superior Courts throughout California. And those are unlimited civil cases where I'm suing the landlord for, you know, all kinds of money, and it's good that it's a landlord because there's an insurance policy that kicks in. So I basically just negotiate with the insurance company. I don't deal with landlords if I can help it. yeah, as soon as we get into the litigation, I can figure out who their insurance company is. And they'll usually, you know, throw some money at it. So, you know, it works out.
Explain what the kind of the average timeline is. And what a person has to do. Let's suppose all they have to do is fork over $300 to you, persuade you that the case is winnable, and then you kind of take it from there. And what kind of risk?
Yeah, and of course there has to be sufficient damages for it to be worth it.
And what,
you know, I mean, it has to be like you obviously have the documentation to support your case, which is easier for some claims than for others. If we're talking about habitability, you can just get the inspector to come out there, and then that's, you know, pretty much all I need. If it's severe enough and outstanding for long enough. And, you know, and then there's discrimination sort of stuff, which can be harder to prove. But, you know, it's really just case-by-case basis. You know, I don't just do habitability claims. I do all kinds of eviction-related stuff as well.
How many cases have you won?
How many cases have I won? Well, that's an interesting question. How many unlawful detainers have I gotten dismissed?
Right.
Because I do evictions as well. So not only do and those I've, you know, done probably 20 by this point. And I only was ruled against once at the end of a trial. But, yeah, I mean, all the other ones have come to, you know, decent terms at least. You know, and it's like, it's also hard to answer that question because most cases settle. So, you know, for instance, I just last month settled a case for a man, disabled man in Oakland, who was just had a horrible landlord there for $175,000. That's the best result I've been able to get so far. But I think that's pretty good for just being in practice a year. and so that's really my only one of these unlimited civil cases that has settled so far.
So, are you kind of the lone wolf tenant lawyer? Are there others you think who are, you know, who your mentors or who are doing this?
Yeah, you know, I worked in places like the Eviction Defense Collaborative as an intern and Tenants Together. And Cynthia is great. She's been giving me a lot of clients, through her activities in San Cruz. And Legal Assistance to the Elderly, where I was just around all of these great people who've been doing tenant law for so long. So it's the eviction lawsuit is a very technical animal, and it took a lot. I mean, as soon as I got my license, I just went out there. And just started litigating for people, asserting defenses, and doing my best to keep people in their homes when I could. So that's been it. Most of my work has actually been in Santa Clara County. And if there's anyone out there who is listening right now, and you have a eviction that's going on, and you are getting evicted for non-payment of rent, and you have habitability issues in the unit, please give me a call, because I would like to represent someone with those circumstances, because I believe that the housing judge in Santa Clara County is not applying the law in that area correctly at all, and I'd like to take him up on appeal.
Name of the judge.
So if that's your situation and you got some activist motivation and you're not afraid to get evicted for the sake of making sure that the law is properly enforced, I would make sure everything I possibly could to prevent that. But
Jason,
that's sort of my next activist project.
Jason, what's the name of this judge who is improperly interpreting the law?
His name is Derek Woodhouse. He's in Department 4. And I hope he's not listening right now, because I have been before him quite a number of times.
Yeah, well, I hear you.
But yeah, I have a thing about him on my website as well, just looking for folks who, I do that one for free, because it's just...
So what percentage of the case of the people that come to you do you take their cases? What's the number of people you turn away because the cases are not winnable?
I am very busy, so I really don't have time for a lot of folk. If it's a good case, I will take it on, but it's such a very, as I said, I have 7 cases already that I'm doing, and, I'll always take an eviction on here and there. I'm doing an eviction right now as well, a very complicated owner move-in situation in San Francisco. I am kind of picky. I will put that caveat out there.
So what I'm saying is, again, what percentage of the cases that come to you do you have to say, oh, too busy, oh, you haven't got enough money, oop, doesn't look like a good case? In other words,
yeah, I mean, I guess the reason it's kind of hard for me to answer that is because it's so case-specific, and it's not really about, percentage, it's about, but I guess it's, I don't know, I probably have to turn away 80% of the people that call me, because, a lot of people think they have claims, or the claim is, it might be a violation of your rights, but it might not be worth enough, there might not be the damages there, and I try to prosecute the most egregious violations with the limited time that I have.
And how many cases are you currently following in Santa Cruz?
In Santa Cruz, I have one at least, and I have to get the complaint out the door on that one, but that's going to be a great one, and I thank Cynthia for referring it to me. I've had a lot of folks contact me from there with significant issues. But only one
case.
It's been difficult for folks out there to come up with that $300.
Well, let me ask you this, Jason.
That I might waive the $300 I get, in a situation where I'm a little less busy, then I will definitely reconsider that, because it's still worth it with the contingency.
So, what about people who, is it possible for people to do their own cases, and how successful is that if you're not a lawyer?
Oh, yeah, I would not even think about it when you're talking about unlimited civil. You can, if you have a, that's a good point, actually. I would suggest it to a lot of folks, because I've spoken to a lot of folks out there who have legitimate violations, but might not have quite, it just doesn't shake down so that it produces a big number at the end. The damages just aren't there. And in that case, if it's up to, I believe it's $250 is the small claims threshold, and you can get help with.
I think it's $10,000 now.
Self-help center at the court. But they don't let lawyers into small claims, so I always have to make sure it's above that before I even consider taking a case. But, you know, if you want to get out there and enforce your tenants' rights, definitely more power to you. I think that's great.
What kind of success have you heard that people have had by doing their own cases? Have you had any, your finger on that at all?
Hello?
What kind of success have people had doing their own cases? Any sense of that?
What kind of success have people had going out and doing small claims actions?
Right.
Well, it depends on the issue. You know, there's always, you know, the very common issue of the security deposit not being returned. And there, you know, you it's a small claims situation. So you sue the landlord, and the courts generally are going to give you your security deposit back. There's also something in, you know, that statute is Civil Code Section 1950.5 that will give you twice what was wrongfully withheld, but you have to show that there was malice, and that courts don't usually go in for, even though one would think it would be very easy to prove that it was malicious.
Jason, I appreciate your calling in. I appreciate your making yourself available for those who have the money to pay, and if you have the time to do it. And I'm glad you're taking a case in Santa Cruz. Anything you want to conclude with? Any thoughts about how the vast majority of poor tenants can deal with these issues themselves, or, you know?
Well, I basically just would tell people that, you know, don't be afraid to fight. There's a lot of people that kind of internalize this whole thing where maybe the landlord can do whatever they want. And if you're worried about not having a roof over your head, you know, if you call the code enforcement or something like that, God, I should rattle off that number here, but I don't have that one with me. But you know, retaliation is illegal as well. So if they try to evict you at that point, then, you know, they're not going to be able to do that. So I would just not be so afraid of evictions. I just hate when people are really afraid of being evicted. I mean, you know, a lot of times it's justified because it can ruin your credit if you lose. But, you know, I see a lot of people with really solid, you know, cases on the defense of an eviction side. And you know, they're just too scared to stand up. So that's what I'll leave them with.
Sounds good. And for people who want to reach Jason Hain, you can contact him at 227-6892 or jason@jasonhain.com. Am I right?
No, it's jasonhainlaw.com.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the correction. I will make that correction in my notes. jasonhainlaw.com.
Okay. Yes.
Well, cool. Thank you for calling in. Have you got any updates?
Well, thank you, Robert. I appreciate putting me out there.
Well, we both appreciate each other here. Thank you, man. Have a good day. And we got about half an hour left in the show. 427-3772 is the call-in number. And we have a comment from Uncle Mike here.
Well, it's not so much to do it with the lawyer that just called in, Jason Haynes, but it's to do with some good news I heard on the radio today on the news that some police officer in New York is being indicted for shooting somebody. Doesn't that sound good with all the negatives we got about that?
Well, yeah, I think I heard about that too, sure. The question is, how many shootings have there been in New York in the last year by police officers, and how many of them have been indicted?
Exactly,
One, you know.
Exactly, yeah, I know. It's terrible. It's terrible abuse.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Mike.
Hey, Robert and Mike. I just wanted to, like, you know, put an ad out there for the Huff meetings on Wednesdays at 11 o'clock. It's going to be at the Pagoda again. I mean, where's it going to be at this coming Wednesday?
Sub Rosa. Well, we're likely to be at the Sub Rosa unless for some reason...
Sub Rosa, if it's not open.
Sub Rosa. Yeah. Sub Rosa.
So
Sub Rosa.
People are interested in these...
Sub Rosa is the place right next to the bike church, for those who are interested, 703 Pacific. Go ahead.
And we had to get on the move. And more people show up, more easy we can get on the move. Thank you.
All right, David. Thank you. We actually had a pretty interesting meeting. Was it yesterday, I guess it was. You were at the meeting, Mike.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Most of it, anyway.
Yeah. I mean, we had some spirited interchange between me and Council Member Posner. He announced that he had actually, based upon information that Huff had provided him through me, he was able to win a victory in lowering the bail schedule for the whole display device nonsense on Pacific Avenue, and I'll talk about that in a moment. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert, this is Dennis.
Yes, Dennis.
Something's wrong with your microphone. That's why that caller just a minute ago couldn't hear you half the time. So either your microphone is not working or you're not speaking into your microphone or the microphone isn't turned up high enough. Something's wrong.
Okay. Well, thank you, Dennis. I appreciate the input. Thank you. Yeah, it's good that, you know, callers can let us know what's cooking. It looks like the microphone is actually sensitive now. So here's the other microphone, and it I think it is better, definitely better. So we will continue with that. Though we haven't too much time left in the show. If you want to call in, 427-3772. So let's see what's next. Let's continue with some of these interviews from the street. Actually, I was going to tell you what happened with the Santa Cruz City Council's meeting a day before yesterday. And we got a report on it. We got a report on it from Micah Posner, who happened to come by the Bagelry where we were having our meeting. It was kind of we had to go to an alternate location because the Sub Rosa was closed. But usually we are at the Sub Rosa Cafe. In any case, it could be that... Are we having technical problems still? Let's find out. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Wait a minute here. Try again, caller, if you want to try to get in touch here, 427-3772. So, the city attorney was presenting a new bail schedule. Bail is the amount of money you have to pay if you want to avoid going to court and simply pay off a fine for a ticket you get. Let's say you're outside the blue marks on the sidewalk or the yellow marks on the sidewalk downtown, therefore in an illegal position, either performing or vending or sitting with a display with a cap that's in front of you. Outrageous, of course, that would be a crime in Santa Cruz, but that's how they've cooked up the law until we're able to turn them back in court or through massive civil disobedience on the streets. If you want to pay for a ticket without going into the whole legal process, appearing at court, pleading not guilty, and then going back for a trial, which is not a trial, as I said before, with a jury, but is only a trial with the judge, who is a Usually, I would suggest you disqualify Kim Basket, who is the basement commissioner, who hears all these cases, unless you kick it up to one of the higher courts, higher both in being on the first floor and also done by real judges rather than by police department compadres, although the judges themselves are no great shakes, I got to tell you. So... what he was able to do was cut the bail in half because the bail schedule is deceptive, and the staff report gave an inaccurate report, as I pointed out to him when we spoke. We had a meeting with Micah on Monday, and he then raised the issue that the bail, for example, for a sleeping band ticket is $20 according to the city's bail schedule. But what you actually pay if you want to have your ticket dismissed without going to court, or if you're found guilty and they decide to charge you, is $157. At least that was what I heard from people who've gotten sleeping band tickets in the last 6 months. So that's what the staff had said is, oh, well, you can sometimes have triple the amount of the bail schedule, so suggesting it would be $60. Well, it won't be $60. It'll be $157. And the same is even worse for display device stuff. If you don't move your table every hour or move your guitar case every hour, the original bail proposed was $60, which actually, if the staff report were accurate, would translate to $180. But it doesn't. It translates between $200 and $300. So Micah Posner made a move to change the bail schedule and actually got two new council members to agree with him, Rochelle Naroyan and Cynthia Chase. I don't, you know, herald this as a great era of enlightenment, mind you, but it is a small victory, and Posner is to be commended for doing it. I also had some problems with Micah as well, because you may remember me in my endless battle around the consent agenda. That's the agenda that has most of the items on the city council agenda and most of the very big ticket items. But they're all sort of, the staff supposedly has looked them all over and said everything's okay, so just vote them through. The Bearcat was on the consent agenda, for instance, the armored personnel carrier that's the subject of so much controversy. And we had to get someone to pull it. In other cities, any member of the public can pull the item so that it gets individually voted on and not just rushed through with all the rest of the consent agenda items. Not in Santa Cruz. Thanks again to Ryan Coonerty, who changed the policy by fiat, just by decree when he was mayor. He didn't bring it up to city council for a vote. He didn't bring it to the public for a vote. He just did it. And Robinson, when she changed the decorum rules, I don't think she necessarily brought that up for a vote either, though she might have. In any case, it's whether they vote on it or not, the citizenry is being denied a basic right. Even if the citizenry voted by initiative to only allow people to speak on an item if a council member pulls it first, that would be a violation of the rights of people at city council, and it doesn't matter if a majority wants to do that. That would be, you'd be infringing on the rights of the minority, since it's often the minority that raises these issues at city council. Most of the majority is either not watching or, you know, too busy and so forth. Are you trying to say something, Mike?
What was going through my mind was, if there's an infringement on individual rights there, would the NACP or the NAACP or whatever it is, would those organizations not take that up?
The NAACP, National Association for the Advancement of Colored People in Santa Cruz, is, of course, even more of a joke than the American Civil Liberties Union. They don't even defend the rights of African-American minorities here, who, in terms of specific abuses by police officers. And it's a scandal, as far as I'm concerned. But when I raise it, I get all these raised eyebrows. Oh, you're criticizing an established civil rights group, and why don't you work more closely with them and all this crap. Now, I've seen how they behave. There are some people you don't work more closely with because you've seen what they do. ACLU is a similar example. The SCORE, Santa Cruz Coalition to Combat Community, to Combat Racism, is another example. These are groups of people who are getting grants of money or maintaining some kind of public posture, or maybe even genuinely are concerned about the issues but haven't got the balls or the ovaries to raise the issues and name the names. They just don't. At least that's been my understanding, and it's too bad, because Santa Cruz does have a population of activists, and it does have a population of people concerned with both justice and compassion. And I think it could actually, we've seen that when we've done our protests outside the police department at what I call Cop Corner. A lot of people are honking in solidarity with us. Admittedly, a honk is not much of a substantive act of support, but it shows you to some extent, you know, what they're thinking of. I mean, we certainly get a hell of a lot more honks than we get, fuck yous from the people passing by. So, another phone call. Excellent. Well, this time I hope we can actually catch this caller. Hi there, caller. I hope you're on free radio.
Hi, Robert. This is Cynthia.
Hey, Cynthia. Can you hear me?
Yeah, from Santa Cruz Tenants Association. I just wanted to share with you that in Monterey County, there's a program called, I think it's called Starfish, where there's a place every night of the week for people who live in their cars to go and have a safe place to park and use a bathroom. It's in Monterey, maybe Seaside, maybe Salinas, that area. And I think they're doing a better job than Santa Cruz County. Their churches are more, much more, charitable to the homeless and people living in their cars there. I thought that was kind of interesting. How come our county doesn't do that? We're tiny. And then their county does it.
No, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, I actually did call Starfish twice to try to get some stats from them. I think I got one call back, but we have not been able to make much connection. There was a protest last week scheduled against the Monterey sitting ban, which was a somewhat of a copycat law.
Against Monterey what?
It's a sitting ban on Alvarado Street, similar to the Santa Cruz sitting bans in the downtown area and other business districts that we have.
I'm going to try to get you hooked up so that you can talk to Jimmy Richard. He is coordinating the church, the program that where people stay in churches at night.
Yeah,
and getting more churches involved in it, and so he knows more of the details. So I'll try to see if he can call you on your show.
Well, that's great, Cynthia. I mean, I know that here in Santa Cruz, the number of churches is dropping off rather than mounting up. I got that information.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And in down there, they're growing, and Jimmy was hired by a group of churches. They have a board of directors. They're all church people, and they want to expand, and they hired him to expand it.
Good.
And so, you know, I think he'll be a good person to talk to.
Definitely.
I'll try to get him to call in.
Yeah, have him call in. I mean, I was actually going to have a call tonight. Maybe he'll still call. I doubt it. From activist Doug Loisel, who is the...
I can't really understand you. I don't know. There's something wrong with your phone. But thank you anyway. I'll listen on the air.
Thank you. Wow. I got problems here, I guess, with these mics. Let's see if we can boost them a little. Doug Loisel was the head of the Homeless Lack of Services Center in 2008, 2009, thereabouts. And he was fired because of allegations of a personal nature, which were actually unfounded. I mean, we worked him out. I mean, he had some problems, but it wasn't anything that really impacted his ability to work at the Homeless Lack of Services Center. But what he did was he has been very interested in the criminalization of homeless people in Santa Cruz. He was much more open than subsequent managements about what goes on there. So Letitia Schwartz, Janine Thomas, Monica Martinez, all these subsequent directors seem more interested in, you know, looting, well, not looting, let's say getting grants for their staff and in clients as well, but you know it's and in order to get those grants, various measures are taken to pander to a prejudice in the Santa Cruz community and in the Santa Cruz City Council too, such as this security gate and the fence and the ID cards and so forth. So I'm hoping to have him on the air to talk about the budget of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, which apparently is over $1 million a year, in fact even bigger, I think. And the amount of money coming from the homeless from the city, which they threatened to withdraw, was something like $40,000, and then there was another $40,000 or $50,000 from the county if they didn't start treating homeless people like prisoners in a cage, or I don't know, people who needed to be protected from the mobs outside, or, you know, it's not, it's really a little unclear, oh, they have to be protected from the drug dealers, or, you know, so forth and so on. And as I said before on the show, if they'd actually done a poll of the clients and asked them, do you want to have a cage? Do you want to have all these bars? Wouldn't you rather have the lockers put in so that people could store their stuff during the day? And I know that you, Mike, have been out there using one of their good new services, which is a kind of resuscitation rehabilitation center. But what do you think? Would you rather have more storage, or do you feel that the cage-like atmosphere is helpful in making you feel more secure?
Well, I don't have any strong opinions at the moment either way about the gate, because first of all, it's not fully in service. People walk in and out of there, including me, freely, and people really don't ask you for any identification. But it is coming around slowly, and it depends on how Gestapo-like they're going going to be eventually when they do implement, when the gate is fully working with the motor and all that stuff. Yeah, I'm staying there right now. It's a resuscitation care center. Stay being there for a few weeks, and I find it a great service for people who've come out of hospital and want to build up their energies a little bit. So also, it's supervised by the HPHP clinic. So every day I see the nurse or the doctor every week or whatever. So so it's good. You know, I have a lot of positivity for it. At the gate, I'll report to you another time when it's really fully in service.
Okay.
I'll let you know.
Sounds good. And let's go back to some of these street interviews while we still have a little time left.
Doing his job, man.
Doing his job,
man.
I'm
saying, just doing my job,
yeah,
man. Just following orders.
Blame all those people doing their job.
Yeah. But I smiled at him, and you know.
This is the handpan musician guy who said he has been told that in order to play his relatively soft and melodic instrument in Abbott Square, which is the latest. Sort of, there's a project that the city is talking about, this wonderful redevelopment coming up in Abbott Square. He suddenly is going to have to get the permission of all the businesses. Now, on Pacific Avenue, you don't need the permission of the businesses to play. In fact, they need to respect your rights, whether they like it or not, you know, unless there's some violation of the law. Creating pseudo-public spaces like Abbott Square, where the businesses have all the say as to whether you can be there, is not something I look forward to.
I believe that, I could be wrong about this, but I believe Abbott Square is a private business.
Well, that's what I just said.
Oh, all right.
But the city is going to be putting money into it as though it were some kind of public venture.
Oh, I see.
Is my concern.
I see.
And they're touting it as some kind of great new opportunity for public use. And it's, you know, it's up to the veto power of ridiculously four businesses. If this cop is even accurate,
you mean my taxes are going to be spent in this private square?
Well, you know, I don't have all the details. I'm concerned that what appears to be a somewhat public area, or is being touted as a public area, by the city council will allow, you know, will spend money on an area based upon the notion that it has a public benefit. Not just, you know, support the four businesses. And we have the same problem with the parklets that they came up with, which is something I differed with Council Member Posner on significantly. This is a proposal that I think they passed to study and bring back more information about the proposal to remove parking spaces downtown and instead establish little parklets that are essentially extensions of private businesses. And I said, I was telling him on Monday, when we had our meeting before the city council meeting a day before, if they're going to take away public space, and parking spaces are public space. I mean, for example, you can't lie down on Pacific Avenue, but you can lie down on top of your car or in your car.
Oh, I see.
You know, you can't sit down on 99% of Pacific Avenue, but you can sit down on top of your car or in your car. So when they start removing public parking spaces without providing some other kind of compensation, other space that's equally public, they are privatizing, and they're essentially allowing the business community a veto power over your activities.
Okay, that doesn't sound right.
No, I don't like it. Now, Mike was saying, well, we're going to help the bike activities expand. And I said, well, I don't mind if you turn a parking space into a public series of bike racks. I mean, you know, back then, that would be better if you could remove some of the bike racks from the sidewalk and put them off in one of these parking areas. And I would go for that. But he is really, I said, but make it specific to there being a public benefit. And he said, no, we can't do that. That would be too complicated. It would be too difficult. We want to just proceed with this.
Why don't they remove some car lots and put in lockers for these homeless people who have to carry around their heavy backsacks all day? You know, that'd be more like a community service.
And Starbucks, apparently, is now not allowing people in with large backpacks. That's what I've now been hearing. I know several, about a year and a half ago, Huff did some protests downtown around that. And we've seemingly were able to change the policies of Starbucks and the coffee roasting company, maybe even Pete's. But although I don't think we got very far with Lulu Carpenter's. But now apparently they're back to their bad old tricks. I talked to them, I don't know, a week ago. And they said it was some corporate order. And I said, is it just for Santa Cruz? Is it everywhere? The guy didn't know. So before you buy coffee at Starbucks, ask if they're going to discriminate against people with backpacks. It's, you know, it's that kind of feedback that makes people who are these businesses that think twice before treating people like, you know, second-class citizens, because they realize that it won't be tolerated or it'll have an impact. So, I guess before I was talking a bit about the consent agenda and what went on with that. And we had the situation where Micah Posner, I've told him, look, I want the public to be able to speak on every item on the agenda. Not that the city council gives a shit what you say. Not that it makes a hell of a lot of difference. But for some reason, you know, that's part of the democratic process. And I guess part of it just exposes how abusive the city council is and how arrogant it is. And, you know, what we need to do is we need to establish alternate centers of power where we can actually get things done that don't involve, you know, going through a reactionary staff and a compliant city council. And I may talk about that more, but our callers come first. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you.
Greetings.
Hi, I wasn't listening to your program, so I may be coming in a little late in the conversation. My name is Jimmy. I'm the program director for iHealth Monterey, and I understand that you folks were discussing some of the homeless issues.
True enough, Jimmy. Cynthia suggested that she was impressed with Starfish's program to provide some legal parking places at night for folks who live in their vehicles over there. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I guess it's basically we have a small group of churches now, five churches, where women can find a safe place to park at night. There's a number of women who are existing by living in their cars. And so, yeah, that's fine. We just wanted, this organization wanted to help find a place for them to have a safe haven in the evening.
And how many vehicles are we talking about?
That tends to fluctuate because the users, you know, their lives are very fluid, and sometimes they need a place, sometimes they find alternate parking. So it goes anywhere from 6 to 18 cars per night.
And is anyone who needs a spot provided one, or is there an upper limit?
No, I think that you would contact Tia over at the Starfish program. I can find her contact information. I'm looking for it now.
Okay.
You can contact her, and then there appears, from my understanding, there is an individual that coordinates the sites each night. There's some interaction that goes on with the host church, but there is also someone who lives in the car that coordinates it each night.
Really?
Too.
Interesting.
And
how many
make sure
spaces?
That there's no problem.
Are these a number of different areas where these spaces are available, or are there just one large area?
It is basically the Monterey Carmel Valley area.
I mean the area that where people actually park.
Oh, it's usually a church parking lot. There's plenty of parking places, and the hosting churches put a porta potty out there to try. And one of the churches leaves the outside restroom open for access.
And how many churches are involved in this program, do you know?
Right now, I think that there's five, the last I heard. We just, but I'm not the expert on this. I work with an adjacent program, because we, the iHealth program, are using some of those same churches.
You work on what program?
The iHealth Monterey, the Interfaith Homeless Emergency Lodging Program for Monterey.
Huh. And is this, how many people are served by this program every night?
Our max is 25 people. And we have a group of about 30 churches, and those churches host the 25 men each night, provide a meal, and provide good company and some conversation, and actually sometimes jobs opportunities come out of those interactions.
And how long has this program been going on?
22 years without missing a night.
Oh, that's great.
And has it been the same size, or did it grow or shrink?
Well, we're a slave to the size of the space that the hosting church has, but normally we stay about 25, 27 nights. We are trying to keep it right at 25.
I know in Santa Cruz we have a law that says a church can allow 3 vehicles in their parking lot, and a business can allow 2 vehicles in its parking lot, but very few churches and businesses allow even that number. So it's, you know, it's not terribly, it's used in small numbers, but not much.
Santa Cruz County appears to be a little bit more legislated into a corner. Monterey is a bit more
liberal,
proactive in trying to.
Now, what about Jimmy? What about the sitting ban protests that were, I guess, probably rained out last Friday?
Right. Monterey is a tourist destination, and I think that the business owners around downtown Monterey are trying to preserve somewhat of the inviting atmosphere that you feel in downtown Monterey. So there is a concerted effort to manage the homeless people, reduce the panhandling, or at least, minimize the panhandling. So there is the tension to that area, but it's not quite as uncompassionate as some other cities.
I understand this. I mean, the law doesn't criminalize panhandling. It criminalizes sitting next to a building, does it not?
The thing that happens is that the transit area is right in the middle of this central tourist attraction area, the downtown area. And I think that the business owners create some pushback against people loitering so that it doesn't impact the appearance, the overall appearance.
No, I'm familiar with the rationale. This is these attacks on homeless people happen in all kinds of cities, and they're always done supposedly because businesses you want to preserve a more cheery atmosphere for tourists, as though letting visible poverty be seen with some kind of obscenity that they don't want to have happen. I hope you're not sympathetic to this.
I work in the industry, so I understand both sides of the coin and how both sides are challenged to try and handle their agenda. But I, too, advocate that and am a activist. I, too, don't want to see being homeless and being poor being criminalized. People being criminalized because they're homeless.
Now, is there a plan reschedule this sitting ban protest that was scheduled for Friday but then seemed to get rained out?
Yeah, I think that is probably in the works, and that I would I'm not the best information spot for that.
Who would know about that if people wanted to be a part of that protest?
I would think that you would contact what is now, they just started this thing. It's an organization. It's community. It's CHMIE. It's community homeless something. But they're the ones. They're the police department and the service provider have kind of partnered up to network so that they can get the service providers to work more in conjunction and to also have a more involved conversation with the police department. So that is probably, it's CHIME, that's the acronym. Sorry about that. I just got off work and
sure, what is
and
it, what
a
is
friend
it,
said what, that I would be interested in what you folks
what
are
is
talking
it,
about.
I'm sorry, what is it called again?
It's Community Homeless, it's CHIME. Monterey effort. I could look it up. How often are you on? I would certainly be willing to call back.
Oh, great. Okay, we're on twice a week. Thursdays, like tonight, from 6 to 8, and then Sunday mornings from 9:30 to 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
I will call you back on Sunday and try to be a much more informed source as we, because this is the conversation worth having.
What other programs?
I agree.
I was wondering, can I ask a question?
Good. Mike has a question for you.
Sure. I was wondering, it's Jimmy, I think is your name, but nice to hear that somebody's making progress down there in Monterey. What other homeless programs are you making progress in? We'd be interested to hear.
I think that one of the things that's happened is that a lot of the programs are now focusing on trying to provide a space, a service during the day where individuals can come and shower and find food.
Can you talk about some of these programs on Sunday when you call back?
Yeah, I sure will.
We're getting close to the end of the show here.
I got you.
Yeah, but thanks, Jimmy, for calling in. I'll hand you back to Robert.
All right, Jimmy. Thank you. Get back to us, on Sunday.
I'll call you back on Sunday, Robert.
Sounds good, man. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right now. Bye-bye.
Well, I think that we're kind of coming up on Uncle Dennis's show. And a lot of calls, a particular tip of the hat to Cynthia of Tenants Together. I'm impressed. Thank you, Cynthia. And thank you all the other callers for calling in. Hey, you're on Free Radio with Robert and Mike.
Hi, Robert. This is Charles in Monterey.
Yes, Charles.
Did you get the email I sent you last week that says Housing First Program in Utah saves tens of thousands of dollars per homeless person?
Yeah, I did. I've been interested in exploring it. I wanted to talk to Utah homeless rights organizations. It has a nice sheen to it, and I want to find out if there's substance beneath the glistening exterior. And I don't know yet.
I sent that to all five Monterey City Council members, and I've got positive replies back from four of them.
Well, that sounds good. Maybe you can call in on Sunday and talk more about it.
Well, I don't know much more about it than that, and it's explained in the link.